Everybody, hello again, everyone, and welcome, welcome, welcome. It's the 24th day of July. It's Mueller time, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, Robert S. Mueller III, Jr. will be venturing up to Capitol Hill today to testify. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for spreading the word, doing all that good stuff. We only grow because of you. Keep talking, whispering in the ears, try subliminal messages, threats, whatever you got to do. Spread the word. I appreciate every last one of you doing that. You can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. What business do we have? Oh, yes. You can email to enter the Kayleigh McEnany signed book. The drawing will be this Thursday. I guess I kind of have confirmation of who the guest is, but I still feel like if I announce it, it'll jinx it and somebody will cancel. You know them. There. I guess that's a hint. Or you can email. I know. I'm horrible at hints. I usually just give everything away and just blurt it all out. But I'm trying to be a little bit controlled. You can also email me to get in the drawing for the signed Carrie Severino, Molly Hemingway book, Justice on Trial, a huge bestseller. So whatever, just email me and tell me to shut the hell up and get on with the show. I'm just glad you're listening, and sending an email lets me know that you are, and I'm not talking to the cats, you know, alone in the basement. So thank you for that. All right, let's get into it, because I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this Mueller testimony. I just want to talk about the politics of what's going to happen today. We'll find out how accurate I am tomorrow. But I'm actually going to be getting my first ever annual physical tomorrow. So I'm going to have to catch up on it later. Tomorrow morning, I got to go to the doctor, and God knows what they're going to do to me. But we'll see. It'll be fun. This is political theater. That's all this is. The Democrats want an audiobook of the Mueller report. That's really what they want. They want him to quote the parts that they've been quoting ad nauseum, selected passages. And I want you to keep this in mind, because I've been watching that The Loudest Voice thing on Showtime about Fox News and Roger Ailes, and it's so overwrought and melodramatic. It's so ridiculous. But one of the things that they did in the last episode was talk about the Acorn tapes. They got the history completely wrong. They talked about it as if Fox broke that news. Oh, Fox, we got this story. Fox didn't get that story. Fox reported on that story, but Andrew Breitbart had that story. Now, I know this because I was there. I was friends with Andrew. This was long before big government launched. Breitbart.com was not what it is now. It was an aggregation site. It just ran stories from the wire services, you know, AP, UPI, AFP, whatever you got. That was it. It was just a straight up landing page with all links to wire services. Andrew did okay with that business, but it wasn't great. It was kind of like a mini Drudge just for wire stories, because you can subscribe to the wire services, and once you pay them, you can do whatever you want with the stories. But biggovernment.com, or actually it was biggovernment.breitbart.com, I think it was, because somebody, no, that was Big Hollywood. Big Hollywood was already launched and going strong, and my friend, the late, great Mike Flynn, was hired by Andrew. He'd been friends with Andrew for years to run biggovernment.com, which hadn't launched yet. The Daily Caller had hired me, and there was no website, so we just kind of sat around in the office and drew pictures of what we thought the website should look like for 6 months. It was a fun time. And Mike would come up, and I'd host poker games in the office on Fridays with a bunch of friends from around D.C. and Hill staffers and stuff, tournament style. And so Mike would come up. I was smoking at the time. Mike smoked. We'd have some adult beverages and shoot the breeze. Well, Mike tells me one day, about 3 weeks before, maybe it was a little bit more, he told me something was coming big when they launched Big Government. And so finally he shows me the video of the Acorn, the first one, the Baltimore one, where they're like, you know what? You can smuggle girls in underage, start a prostitution ring, no big deal. Here's how you do it. It was a total shock to me. And then Mike tells me that they've got a bunch of these videos from cities across the country. And I thought, wow, you're just going to bombard day one when big government launches, that this is just going to destroy them. And no, and he explained to me how they were going to do it one every day or every other day, give the left time enough to deny, well, this is just an isolated incident, so on and so forth. And then boom, you hit him with San Diego. Boom, you hit him with Philadelphia, after they keep saying isolated incident. And the time and time again, they've got these people that work for Acorn helping set up a child prostitution ring. So that was the story. It was Breitbart's story. It was the story that they launched big government with. I know, I was there. Well, in this documentary, it was, or not documentary, in this Showtime series, it was Roger Ailes claiming that they've got, this is their story, they started this story, so on and so forth. There's casual mention once of Breitbart, but they make it as though it's a Fox News story. It wasn't a Fox News story at all. It was a Breitbart story. The Fox News was the only network to bother to report on it. But the reason I, for a long time, and then they eventually had to, everybody else had to report on it. But I bring that up because one of the arguments that has been used against Veritas, James O'Keefe, who was behind those videos, and Hannah, God, I can't remember her last name, but Hannah played on a softball team I played on. About a week before the video came out, we almost killed her when a guy on the team drilled her in the forehead with a line drive while she was on second base. She's survived, thank God. But the complaint that the left used against that, and it's addressed in this stupid Showtime miniseries, supposedly by a conservative guy, and like, oh, these videos are heavily edited. You can't tell anything. They're doctored footage. You can't see the he went through every single liberal Media Matters for America talking point as a so-called conservative. Oh, you can't see any. My answer to that was always the same. In what context is advising somebody to how to set up a child prostitution ring good? In what context could you take that out of? And so as you hear it out of context, recoil in horror at the prospect of this person teaching you how to do this. But when put back in its proper context, you go, oh, well, now that makes perfect sense. Because there is no context that you can put that in to make that make perfect sense. Keep that in mind. And I know I've gone way off the reservation. You think I don't know what I'm talking about, but I am a lowly paid podcasting amateur. The reason I bring this up about how the left responded to heavily edited is what they've been doing with the Mueller report and trying to do with no real success is to take selective quotes out of context. It's different. James O'Keefe eventually, I mean, they released the full transcripts of the hours of video that they had. If you wanted to read it, you could. There was a whole hell of a lot of context in the edited clips, but everything you see on the nightly news is edited. You see a 15-second clip of a politician making a statement. You think that's all they did was run in the room, say something for 15 seconds, and then scurry away? No. Everything is edited. Reported, printed report interviews are edited. The journalists decide what to put in and what to leave out. But when a conservative does it, well, that's an outrage, and you have to discount everything that James O'Keefe has ever done, no matter how damning the video evidence is, no matter what you have some left-winger saying, because it's heavily edited. They're hypocrites. Well, the Democrats have been doing the exact same thing with the Mueller report. It's 448 pages long. They'll pick out a line or two here and there, maybe even a paragraph, and put it up on the screen on their cable news shows and read it and say, well, see, there you go. What they'll leave out, they're still pushing this Russian collusion hoax, for example. They think that they can breathe some life back into that thing like Frankenstein's monster. Bring it back to life. It's alive. It's alive. Well, they're going to ask Mueller about very specific parts of the Mueller report tomorrow. And who knows how involved in writing the thing Mueller actually was. I don't think he, judging by his statement in the one little lame pseudo press statement that he did before, and his general demeanor, I'm not sure how involved he was in the whole thing, to be perfectly honest with you. But they're going to read selected quotes from it, heavily edited quotes, I might add, and ask him to expand upon them. Now, whether or not he will remains to be seen. We won't know until, I think it's 10:30 when he starts testifying, 10 or 10:30. But they will mostly try to get him to say, well, on page 372, paragraph 4, would you read the first three lines? And it's going to be these things that they've been quoting ad nauseum. This is just my prediction, but this seems to be what they want. They want somebody else to voice. They want Robert Mueller himself to voice his own report, but only parts of it. They want the audio version of the book. So there's going to be a whole lot of that, because Mueller's already said that he's not going to expand beyond. I was really surprised by the sound of Mueller's voice. It was a lot more high-pitched and whiny than a guy who looks like that, I think, should sound. But that's just me. He's already said that he's not going to go beyond what is in the report. He's bringing a lawyer along with him to advise him and probably remind him of all the things he wasn't involved in. So when they get to the parts of the report, that what are you talking about? And there's going to be a lot of lawyer consultations, which will eat into the time. So he's only going to be up on Capitol Hill for 5 hours. He gets special treatment because he's a prop witness, not a fact witness. A fact witness is somebody you're trying to get information from. A prop witness is somebody you're trying to get footage for the nightly newscasts, the cable news, and perhaps some campaign ads from. So as a prop witness, he's going to eat up a lot of that time. He gets the special treatment. You got 3 hours in the House and 2 hours in the Senate, and that is it. He gets to stand up from the table like a dealer at blackjack in Vegas, clap his hands, and move on and go back about his business, living off his family's wealth. But on the Republican side, they have a different task, which I think will be equally as hard if Mueller, in fact, sticks to what he said. Oh, by the way, on the out-of-context thing, every quote will be designed to try and lay down Donald Trump is obstructed justice. Read this sentence that says he obstructed justice. He colluded with Russia. There's ample opportunity, ample evidence, shady deals. Just read that thing. It's important to remember the conclusions. No matter what they get Mueller on tape saying, there was no collusion, there was no obstruction. So if you pull out individual quotes, you can make anybody look bad. That's what this is about. On the Republican side, the question, this is what drives me nuts. I know this is wild speculation. I know it hasn't happened yet. And I know that my track record of buying lottery tickets is I'm batting a donut. I got zero on them. But on this one, you can take it to the bank. Republicans are going to be awful tomorrow. Democrats are going to be annoying as hell, and Republicans are going to be awful. Why do I say that? Derek, I can hear the keyboards being pounded right now. How dare you say that? Republicans, blah. No. You can go ahead and email me about it if you want, but the reason I'm saying Republicans are going to be awful is, well, one, history. I've seen them conduct investigations and hearings before. Remember when Hillary went up there for the Benghazi hearing, was there all day, and every blowhard up there had to ask the same question, but they had to get video of them asking the question? Expect that again. If Republicans were strategic, if Republicans were smart, and my fingers are crossed, I'm hoping that tomorrow morning they wake up and they say, you know what, we're going to try something different because we suck at this. And they come up with a plan. Each member gets a set time. It's normally 5 minutes. I don't know. It might be less than 5 minutes because they got to try and cram everybody in there this time. But it's generally 5 minutes. What they do with that 5 minutes is totally and completely up to them. In this case, I think the hearing's 3 hours, so each side will get an hour and a half. And then they divvy that up amongst their members. What they do with that hour and a half is entirely up to them. If they were smart, and mind you, that is a big, big if. If they were smart, they would cede it all to one or two members. Every minute, I would personally give it to Jim Jordan. I would give it to Jim Jordan, and with the caveat, don't give me any blowhardy speeches. Don't give me any posturing moments. Jim Jordan isn't really known for that. He's a pretty good interrogator. And have him actually ask serious questions about the report and about the investigation and why they didn't go into certain things, like why they didn't think that not telling the FISA court that the basis for the FISA warrant was the dossier, which was paid for by the Clinton campaign. Things like that. Why? There are all kinds of questions. When did you know that there was no collusion, and why did you not withhold it? The second you knew there was no collusion, should you not have reported that? Because you're kind of implying that there could have been obstruction of justice into your investigation into collusion. Well, if you learned after 2 weeks that there was no collusion, then you kept the investigation open for what purpose? Were you trying to elicit some kind of obstruction? Were you trying to be a thorn in the president's side? What took so long? It seems as though you found out there was no collusion pretty quickly, and then you kept that to yourself for a year and a half. Why was that? Who decided that? Those sorts of questions. Jim Jordan could ask. Jim Jordan is an affable guy. He's a good-looking guy. He's not, and let's face it, on both sides of the aisle up on Capitol Hill, there are some people who are just, you got to wonder how they got elected. They're awful. They present horribly. They speak garbled. They're arrogant. They come off just making you feel gross. It doesn't matter who they are, how they vote, or whatever. It's just a sense. It's not their job. It's the sense that they get off. And you know these, you know people like this, that you just get a weird, creepy vibe off of them. That Blake Farenthold guy who resigned from Congress, he struck me as that way. And you look at him and you go, how the hell did you ever, who voted for you? Who voted for you, you weirdo? And he left under some kind of scandal and using office money inappropriately for paying off people. It was a disgusting display of abuse of power. But you got to wonder, how in the hell, who looked at this guy and listened to this guy and said, yep, he represents me? Because I don't really want to go to that district. I just don't. So if they cede all of their time to a Jim Jordan, you have a smart guy who knows how to cross-examine, whose voice is not grating, who is not prone to weirdness, asking serious questions. Instead, what will likely happen is every Republican will get their time. Let's just say they get 5 minutes. I assume it's going to be a little bit less because there's so many people on this committee. Everybody gets 5 minutes. And their first 2 minutes will be some kind of blowhardy speech or setup. And if they get around to questioning, it will be a question that has been asked at least a half a dozen times by the time they get to their question. Why do I say that? Because that's how politicians in general work, but Republicans in particular, when they know that people are watching, they want a grandstand. They want a peacock up there. It would be so much better if Republicans knew how to message and were more interested in getting to the truth than getting on the news, but that's just not the world we live in. Republicans are horrible at messaging, horrible at communicating, which is disgusting to me as a conservative because liberty should be the easiest thing to message. Liberty and personal responsibility isn't that tough of a sell to the American people, although it is getting tougher. Instead, they'll find a way to blow it. I suspect not a whole hell of a lot is going to come out of this thing one way or the other. I don't think Mueller is going to give either side what they want, which will have both sides running to the cameras claiming they got exactly what they want. They had the proof. The facts are on their side. When at the end of the day, the report stands, no collusion, no obstruction, this dog and pony show is It's just one last opportunity. It's kind of funny to hear Democrats talking about the deficit and the debt and trying to blame Donald Trump for the massive debt that's going on, the massive deficit. It's just one more day. Remember, every second that that hearing lasts tomorrow, a little pile of our money is being set on fire. And that will continue for 5 hours tomorrow. It's just an opportunity to make campaign ad footage. That's all it is. Unless, I mean, maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe there'll be a massive bombshell. I just don't see it coming because there's nothing in the report. Mueller's not going to go, you know what, I did have this bloody knife and glove that I found in Donald Trump's glove compartment. It turns out that he's been murdering people, but I didn't feel it was appropriate to mention it in the report. Now I'm mentioning it. That's not going to happen. There isn't a smoking gun. There is no bloody knife. There are no gloves, whatever. So this dog and pony show is going to eat up all the oxygen tomorrow. But I don't really suspect that it will get any new breath, if that makes sense. One last thing on the Mueller testimony, because so much hope and so many dreams of the leftists are riding on today's testimony. You remember it was, they were, look, Donald Trump, we got to wait for the Mueller report. Mueller's going to find collusion. Mueller's going to find, they're going to be grounds for impeachment in the Mueller report. It's all over. We're just waiting for Mueller, waiting for Mueller. And then Mueller dropped like a giant turd, just splatted on the deck. And so they're like, oh, damn, dejected. MSNBC and CNN's ratings tanked. They'd been hyped up, waiting for the Mueller report so long, ready, just ready for their impeachment day, and it didn't happen. And now, after Mueller, the sale from the left was, yes, but okay, Mueller didn't find anything. We kind of thought that there might not be anything in there anyway. But the Southern District of New York, ooh, the Southern District of New York, they're looking into the Stormy Daniels allegations. Michael Cohen is working with this Southern District of New York. Michael Cohen knows where the bodies are buried. All of this, that's going to be that's the real end of Donald Trump. And then last week, the Southern District of New York came through and said, hey, we're closing our investigation, and that's pretty much it. So now they're back to trying to pin their hopes back on Mueller. The liberals just can't admit that maybe the president of the United States didn't do anything unseemly. Maybe he didn't do the things most tactfully that he did do. He did them in a way that might have been rude, but so what? Clutch your pearls and get over it. But maybe he didn't break the law. And that's an important distinction. Well, not really to them. They tried to impeach him last week because of a tweet they didn't like. So, but the Washington Free Beacon, David Rutz over there, I use his montages all the time because he has this gigantic archive of all of these journalists and media people saying all these ridiculous things. He put together a little montage of that middle step that I talked about. Before we get back to pinning your hopes on Mueller, back when it was the Southern District of New York, that was the savior. And the voices you're going to hear are all paid commentators or hosts on CNN and MSNBC. It starts off with David Muir and Brett Baer announcing that the Southern District of New York was closing up their shop in this investigation, that there was nothing else forthcoming. And then he goes back in time. David Rutz is really good at this. He goes back in time and finds a bunch of the times. This isn't all the time. It's only 2 minutes long. He finds a bunch of the times and the ridiculous claims that were made in the name of the Southern District of New York is really where you should be paying attention to. We should have been paying attention to the Southern District of New York all along. That's what's really finally going to stick it to Donald Trump and get rid of him. And now we know it's not. So as Democrats turn their hopes and focus back to Robert Mueller for at least a day, I want to stroll down memory lane with this David Rutz montage of when it was they'd sort of accepted that Mueller wasn't going to get Trump, but the Southern District of New York, ooh boy howdy, that was going to be the thing that brought him down.
Federal prosecutors in New York today ending their investigation into the hush money payments to Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal.
The end of that investigation likely means no additional charges will be filed against anyone, including the president.
This is where it ends for this president.
Many legal analysts have said that the Manhattan office of the Justice Department, the Southern District of New York, poses the real threat to the president.
He's not out of legal hot water. There are a number of investigations. Southern District of New York, we're looking into the Trump Organization.
Is there something there? If a prosecutor is looking at everything you ever did, probably.
Could Trump Org be in trouble?
You can see sort of the dominoes falling.
And as far as that 10 years in the Trump Organization, that is where all the bodies are buried.
The Southern District of New York might offer more trouble to Trump in the Trump orbit than even the special counsel's investigation.
If they come out with some stuff, he is done.
Forget Mueller. Forget about Mueller.
Russia collusion, whatever.
What's happening in the Southern District of New York is an existential crisis.
The Southern District poses an existential threat.
An existential threat.
An existential threat.
A greater existential threat.
I think Trump should be really nervous.
He's in big trouble.
Dershowitz is basically saying in the Southern District of New York, you're screwed.
That is, the Southern District investigation poses a real threat.
A real threat.
A bigger threat.
The greatest threat.
The real threat.
The greatest threat.
More of a threat.
Deep threat.
An existential threat not only to his presidency.
I do think that's where the trouble lies.
Very much under threat of being destroyed, demolished, and becoming a criminal liability.
You either see an indictment of executives at the company or of the organization itself.
Don Jr. is at the top of the family list as someone who is totally exposed criminally.
It's going to get to his children. It's going to get to other people in that organization.
Not just for the president, but for Ivanka, for Don Jr.
And people are going to start flipping, I think, that Trump never thought would flip before.
What is going to put him in jail eventually, what is going to destroy everything he has ever built and his children, is a 30-year dishonest criminal enterprise. One thing will take him out of the presidency. The other thing will ruin him forever.
It'll ruin him forever. It'll bring about the end of Trump administration, the Trump organization, and Donald Trump himself. He will turn into the Wicked Witch of the West and start melting, melting, melting. And now the Southern District of New York is done. No new indictments are expected or forthcoming. And that balloon was popped. So they have, I love Brian Williams in there. A lot of legal experts are saying, because he still thinks he's an honest newsman. They put him on the graveyard shift on MSNBC because they had to pay him like $10 million. They just signed him to a multi-year contract for like $10 million a year when he was exposed as a total and complete fraud. So they couldn't just fire him because he had a contract. And apparently they must have written into the contract, you can be a total and complete fraud and we won't, you know, can't fire you and terminate this contract or something. And so there, he's now Mr. Serious Newsman at 11 p.m. when everybody's in bed. Well, some legal experts are saying, many legal experts, all the legal experts on the payroll at MSNBC are telling you exactly what you want to hear. Not so much anymore. So now they're back on the Mueller train. Let's see where those tracks lead. Other tracks lead to anti-Semitism, it turns out, when it involves members of the Gang of Four and really all the progressive Democrats, just Democrats in general. I guess that's a little unfair. It's the progressive Democrats, the real whack jobs, and the media who cover for them. Yesterday, there was a vote in the House of Representatives on a not, this is what's ridiculous. This is what our government spent yesterday doing. A non-binding resolution denouncing BDS, meaning the Boycott, Divest, and Sanction Movement. It's the anti-Semites looking to destroy Israel, is what it really is. That's what it's shorthand for. They want to destroy Israel. So preemptively, the House of Representatives was looking to condemn that concept. Nancy Pelosi has denounced BDS as anti-Semitic. Chuck Schumer has denounced BDS as anti-Semitic. Jewish Democrats from coast to coast have denounced BDS as anti-Semitic. Yet the progressive Democrats, AOC, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, surprisingly not Ayanna Pressley, Maybe she just voted wrong. I don't know. She's the only one in the Gang of Four to not or to vote in favor of condemning BDS. But this resolution shouldn't have been controversial. A government shouldn't have to do this. It's a non-binding resolution, which means it means nothing whatsoever. It's non-binding. Yet they spent all day, the news was talking about this for a very long time yesterday when not teasing the Mueller testimony. Listen to the way that CNN framed this. And this tells you everything you need to know about who the media is protecting and where they fall on the political spectrum. Their headline, written by Ashley Kilo and Claire Foran. Their headline reads, quote, House approves resolution opposing Israel boycott movement in divisive vote. In divisive vote. And then you read down the story, you think, well, this must have been by the skin of the teeth. It's very divisive, this vote. Nope. The story reads, the House of Representatives on Tuesday voted to approve a non-binding resolution that opposes the boycott movement against Israel, a measure that won broad bipartisan support but faced pushback from some high-profile progressives. And this is the kicker. The vote was 398-17. I'll repeat those numbers because this is what CNN described as divisive. The vote was 398-17. That means only 17 people voted against basically BDS, the anti-Semitic boycott destroy Israel movement. But CNN calls it divisive. It's divisive. It's very divisive. Now, when you hear divisive, it could, you know, it's a hard fought, long debated, could have gone either way. Who knows what's going to happen? And who knows how this is going to work out? But no, 398-17. And CNN's like, well, shoot, it's a very divisive vote. Why? Because, the answer's right there in the last half of the first sentence of the opening paragraph. Faced pushback from some high profile progressives. That's it. If you go against the squad, if you dare speak against and go and vote against the wishes of any of the members of the Gang of Four, why, that is divisive. Why are you dividing yourself from the Gang of Four? It's not that, hey, man, there are 17 members of the House of Representatives, all Democrats, who are so full of hatred for Israel that they can't even fake it for one vote on a non-binding resolution. That's the way you should look at it, because that's the way it is. Or there are 17 members of the House of Representatives, 17 Democrats in the House of Representatives who hate Israel so much that they couldn't bring themselves to just miss a vote or even vote present. They had to vote no. No, we should support boycotting, divesting, and sanctioning of Israel because it's a horrible apartheid state. Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar have compared the BDS movement to boycotts of Nazi Germany in a fit of stupidity, in a fit of lack of self-awareness. They actually did that. Rashida Tlaib did it yesterday in a speech on the floor of the House of Representatives. That's how nuts these people are. And that's how it gets framed. Oh, it's a very divisive thing. Could go either way. No, it couldn't go either way. What could go either way was an interview on CNN with Congressman Brad Schneider. He's a Democrat from Illinois. He was on board with condemning BDS as being anti-Semitic. And this interview is telling. They're scared to death. These normal backbench members you never heard of Congress, these Democrats, are scared to death. They don't have to have a bowel movement because it's scared right out of them, of the Gang of Four and running afoul of them, which is part of the reason Nancy Pelosi is scheduled to meet with AOC on Thursday. Reports are they're going to have a sit down and we're going to see. Look, Nancy Pelosi behind closed doors, I could only imagine what she's like. I think AOC's the same in public as she is in private. She's dumb and arrogant, so she doesn't know that maybe you want to pump the brakes a little bit on the crazy when you're in public, and you can let it your freak flag fly when you're in private. Nancy Pelosi knows that. Nancy Pelosi has been in power for a very long time in Washington, D.C. You don't get there by being crazy, at least in public. You get there by scaring the hell out of everybody in private. So it'll be fun to watch that one. But these Democrats are scared to death of these women. And Brad Schneider, during this interview, describes the BDS movement as anti-Semitic. And then is asked whether or not Rashida Tlaib is an anti-Semite for supporting BDS. And they left out, you know, all of her past statements, her associations with people who are connected to shady organizations and terrorist organizations, so on and so forth. It's a sugar-coated mainstream media interview, but they do press him about this, and his answer is hilarious. His answer is essentially as if somebody had said, you know what, the KKK is a horrible racist organization. Awful. But I don't want to call the Klan members racists because, you know, people join the Klan for all kinds of reasons. Maybe it's, you know, just a fun club to hang out with. It's a bunch of guys that go out and drink Pabst Blue Ribbon on the weekend and just have fun. It's that insane. When I heard this audio, I couldn't believe an adult human being would be that he's 57 years old, Brad Schneider is, and he's scared to death of a 29-year-old congresswoman and her little gang of four purity cops. Listen to this exchange on CNN.
We must also be vigilant against bigoted or dangerous ideologies masquerading as policy, and that includes BDS.
I assume you agree with that statement?
100%.
So if BDS is bigoted, are those who support it, your colleagues, bigoted? Or in this case, because we're talking about Jews, anti-Semitic?
Well, I can't speak. There are a lot of people who support the BDS movement, but they may not necessarily understand the intent or the expression of how BDS movement is actually what it's fighting for. The fact that it's not just fighting against the occupation of the West Bank or Gaza, it denies Israel's connection to the land going back to 1948.
But you said you explained that to your colleague, Rashida Tlaib.
I have, and she has her narrative, and she has her experience. I'm less
but
concerned about...
But you don't take it a step further and say that... A lot of people who are looking at the opponents and listening to the opponents, who very much support this Russian because they think BDS is anti-Semitic, they are ascribing that anti-Semitism to these lawmakers, your colleagues. You don't agree?
So I'm not going to subscribe it necessarily to the supporters, but the movement itself, its intent, its goals are anti-Semitic in intent. The expression of BDS, what we see on college campuses, the intent to create harassment, hostile environments for supporters of Israel on college campuses, to make it difficult for companies that are doing business with Israel in the United States and around the world, that is by its very nature anti-Semitic. The movement itself uses anti-Semitic means. That's why it's important tonight that we're going to have more than 75% of the House co-sponsoring a resolution condemning the global BDS movement.
I don't want to beat this anymore, but if somebody supports a movement that you just very clearly laid out, you believe has anti-Semitic means and is an anti-Semitic movement, how do you disconnect or separate the people who support it from the movement itself?
So I very simply, the fact that they support this movement, I believe they have a understanding of what they believe the movement does without fully understanding the impact of it.
Okay.
He's essentially saying they totally support something that is anti-Semitic, but they're too stupid to understand how it's anti-Semitic or what anti-Semitism is. I mean, that's an argument. He's making an argument. I'm not sure it's a particularly effective or believable argument, but he's definitely making an argument. And he wouldn't have to do this sort of verbal tap dancing if he weren't absolutely terrified of the Gang of Four and their rabid anti-Semitism, their rabid progressivism, their rabid demand for purity of thought in every way, shape, or form. You can tell he's scared to death of these people. Oh, well, look, I believe the BDS movement is anti-Semitic. Oh, so then the people who support it are anti-Semites, right? Well, I wouldn't go that far. You wouldn't go that far? You really wouldn't go that far? I don't think that's that far. I think that's not a long drive. I think it's a very short saunter just across the wall or just across the hall. But nope, this is the world that these progressive purity police have created. Live in fear of us. We will destroy you. We decide who is good enough and who can still be accepted in polite society and liberal polite society. It was funny to watch. Funny and kind of painful and embarrassing for the guy to watch. Speaking of embarrassing, there are reports. He's back, ladies and gentlemen. Carlos Danger. No, it's not a movie, although it could make a good movie. Since he's a Democrat, they'll never make a movie about Anthony Weiner. Not the movie that deserves to be made about Anthony Weiner. But the UK Daily Mail, they had an exclusive. Their headline, exclusive. Anthony Weiner moves back in with Huma Abedin as he's spotted in a tank top and shorts using a trolley to roll in designer garment bags, a hockey stick, and suitcases into his family home after prison stint for sexting 15-year-old girl. Yeah, she just can't quit him, turns out. Huma loves her some Weiner. Anthony Weiner is allegedly, well, who knows why? Everybody's notoriously tight-lipped, but it's a possibility that Anthony Weiner just doesn't have any place else to live. Who's going to employ this guy? You know, he could have been and was well on his way, as creepy as it is, to being the mayor of New York City. He could have done that. He could have won that race. He kind of rehabilitated himself after his first stint that caused him to have to resign from Congress for sexting young women, pictures of his genitalia. But he just couldn't quit sexting. And it turns out he was sexting with a 15-year-old girl, and that's a felony. And he went to prison for a while because of it. So you're not going to see even an MSNBC lining up to employ him, especially, I mean, I guess maybe if they hadn't had their problems with the other NBC employees like Matt Lauer, they might have been open to the prospect of employing Carlos Danger as some sort of commentator. But since they have had their own little problems, they can't do it. That leaves him kind of unemployable. Would you hire that man? Hell no. So maybe Huma is taking him back in out of kindness, out of pity, out of, look, I've got a kid with this guy, so we can't have him living in a homeless shelter or something like that. But it could be, since she forgave him the first time, that she's forgiven him again. And like, I don't judge anybody's marriage. I wouldn't want their marriage, but what goes on behind closed doors is none of my concern. I just look at this as sad and funny, and I feel bad for the kid. The kid's already going to have a hard enough life with his dad being his dad and with what his dad did and his last name, Lord knows. But then to have his parents in and out of this, I'd like to think that his parents could set a better example for him. But this is the example they chose to set, whatever it may be. God bless him, God love him, Godspeed and all of that. But I just love the idea that Huma just can't quit Weiner. She just can't quit Weiner. Wieners. Anyway, another story. This is kind of funny because this is driving the left nuts. They're very upset. The Trump campaign, in a bit of marketing genius, and damn it if Donald Trump isn't anything but a marketing genius, they were selling plastic straws on their campaign website because the left wants, you know, paper straws. Paper straws suck, by the way. I had paper straws the other day at a restaurant, and I had to go through like three of them, which doesn't seem particularly environmentally friendly, because they kept, you know, if they sit there in your drink long enough, they become what happens to paper, no matter how tightly wound it is, when it gets wet. While the Trump campaign selling plastic straws, they sold 140,000 plastic straws. They raised $200,000 off of it. Absolute genius. Washington Examiner has the story. The Trump-Pence campaign's latest attack on anything liberal has caught fire. The campaign said Tuesday it had sold more than 150,000 Trump-labeled recyclable plastic straws, making $250,000. More importantly, for Donald Trump's reelection campaign, Brad Parscale, the campaign manager for Trump, who I'm going to try to get in the office, try and get him on the show, he reported that more than half of the straw purchasers were new donors to the campaign, which is huge. In a campaign, you can only go back to the well so many times. People are capped on how much they can give. So the more people you've got interested in giving, the more money you can potentially raise. More donors, more chances to raise money. To bring in a massive amount of new donors through something like this and get their contact information and all that is a huge coup. Marketing genius. Plus, the left is wildly upset about it. So that makes it all the more hilarious. So we go from hilarious to not funny at all. Cory Booker news. Poor Cory Booker. He just seems like he desperately wants to be president. He desperately needs to be president almost. And he's just so bad at it. Just so bad at it. He was on the Late Show or whatever the hell it is with Seth Meyers. Wildly unfunny. And in this clip that from the other night when he was on, I want you to notice something. Cory Booker condemns the president for body shaming while simultaneously calling him fat and out of shape. He also attacks or threatens, says he would like to punch the president, and it would do that. It would, you know, it would do damage to the president because the president's fat and old, while then saying that Donald Trump is somebody who body shames people. It's a sea of contradictions, a sea of hypocrisy. Of course, Seth Meyers, being the serious person that he is, not a journalist in any way, shape, or form, and that would be forgivable if he were a comedian in any way, shape, or form, but he's not really that either. Just kind of sits there and giggles along. Have you noticed all these Democrats are running all over the talk show circuit? The late night talk shows, the candidates are, or the late night shows are fighting desperately to get Democrats on because they're all in the tank for Democrats. There's no entertainment value for having on, well, maybe there is entertainment value for having on Marianne Williamson, but there's no entertainment value for having Cory Booker on. He's not sewed up the nomination. He's not even in serious contention, according to the latest polls. He's made kind of a buffoon of himself on the campaign trail thus far, dating back to his I Am Spartacus moment. But he's a Democrat, and they just want to prop up Democrats. So they put him on every show, any chance they get. They're all down with the cause. Anyway, listen to this exchange and listen for those little hypocrisies. They're not even little hypocrisies. Listen for those hypocrisies I'm talking about. And imagine, try to imagine this man being president of the United States.
In all seriousness, yeah. Insofar as we talk about politeness, which will be an interesting thing in this campaign going forward, you talk about civic grace. And you talk about courageous empathy. Can you speak a little bit to what you mean by those ideas and also the difficulty in expressing those, in practicing those at a time where the opponent will likely not be using
those?
Yeah,
I mean, look, I was running on an Iowa stage and we were so psyched, hundreds of people there. I'm about to jump up and this guy sees me, the former tight end from Stanford University. He's a big guy. He puts his arm around me and he goes, dude, I want you to punch Donald Trump in the face. And I stop in my tracks and I go, dude, that's a felony, man. Yeah. and you know, this Donald Trump is a guy who you understand he hurts you, and my testosterone sometimes makes me want to feel like punching him, and which would be bad for this elderly, out of shape man that he is. Yeah. If I did that, this physically awesome. Physically weak specimen, physically weak specimen. But you see what I'm talking there? Even that's his tactics, and you don't beat a bully like him, fighting him on his tactics, on his terms, using his turf. He's the body shamer. He's the guy that tries to drag people in the gutter. And this is a moral moment in America. And to me, what we need from our next leader, especially after the time of moral vandalism that we're in right now, is we need a leader that's not going to call us to the worst of who we are, but call us to the best of who we are.
Anybody in the world believe that Cory Booker's body is just coursing with testosterone? Out of control testosterone. My testosterone makes me want to punch him sometimes. Yeah, Cory, I think you're a slapper. I just think Cory's a slapper. That's just me. I could be wrong about that, but I view Cory as a slapper. But I love that. He's the one who body shames people. This out of shape, fat, ugly, old guy. He does. No, I'd hurt him if I hit him. I'm not going to do that. But, hey, you know, what are you going to do? And he wonders why he's not getting traction in the polls. He just can't figure it out, ladies and gentlemen. What is he doing wrong? Maybe he should ask his imaginary friend T-Bone for advice. He's a nut. Speaking of nuts, this is kind of funny. Democrats are very upset that Tom Steyer, the multi-billionaire who was funding the impeach Trump campaign. He's a big greenie, wants green this, green that. He really wants the green. He made his billions in oil and coal, and now he wants to ban those things and use the power of government to force everybody to use his new green technologies, because that's how the left rolls. Well, Democrats are very upset that Tom Steyer has decided that he can't really pick a candidate in this field of morons, so he's got to run. The Washington Free Beacon reports Democratic lawmakers are not pleased with billionaire activist Tom Steyer's long shot bid for the presidential nomination, according to reporting by Politico. Interviews with Democratic senators and representatives reveal significant resentment towards Steyer for his practice of using his wealth to pressure lawmakers that have not advocated for impeaching Trump. Steyer, who also stresses climate change as part of his platform, has spent millions targeting House Democrats, including Jerry Nadler and Elijah Cummings, to pressure them to pursue impeachment. They're very upset. How dare you enter this race, you billionaire, you white billionaire? You have no business being here. Get out of the race. Oh, by the way, please keep writing giant checks. It's funny, they love Tom Steyer. They absolutely love themselves some Tom Steyer until suddenly he decided to run for president. And then this man that they loved, this ring that they were happily kissing, suddenly became an opponent and a threat to the order of things. Now, I'm no Tom Steyer fan, but anybody who wants to can run for president of the United States as long as you're 35 years old and a natural-born citizen. It's just funny to see the establishment going to somebody that they've sucked up to so much because he writes big checks, he funds a lot of the left, and now suddenly they're saying, he shouldn't be running here. He's trying to buy his way into the White House. That is an outrage. By the way, Tom, do you think you could max out to my campaign and to my political action committee? Could you please do that? And take your dirty money out of this race, but leave a pile of it sitting on the dresser as you sneak out of the room. Speaking of having piles of cash, Joe Biden. I swear to God, at this point, I think Joe Biden wants to lose. I don't know what his strategy is. He's all over the map. He's spending his time apologizing for his 40-year Senate career. He's under attack for his years as the Vice President of the United States. He's been accused of groping and grabbing and sniffing and all these things that there's video of him doing by a whole bunch of women, making them wildly uncomfortable. There are allegations that he's losing his mind. I mean, you name it, and it has slowly been stuck into Joe Biden. I've described it as death by a thousand cuts because nobody wants to go up to him and just take him out. Nobody wants to whack him right now because that will piss off a lot of his supporters, a lot of the Democratic Party establishment. And while the energy is with the lunatics, the money is with a lot of the money anyway, is with the establishment. So you want Joe Biden out, but you don't want to do the one, you don't want to do a one and done death blow to his campaign. So they're doing it sort of death by a thousand cuts. You kind of expect that when you're the front runner. What you don't expect is the front runner to start cutting himself. And Joe Biden has done a lot of unforced errors. And this is no different. This is Washington Free Beacon again. When asked if he could have beaten Donald Trump in the 2016 presidential election, former Vice President Joe Biden told the New York Times, quote, "I don't know." The best thing that Joe Biden has going for him, aside from name recognition and his ties to Obama, and Obama's sitting on the sidelines with this one, the thing he has going for him is the perception, at least as of now, by Democrats across the country that he is the guy who can beat Barack Obama. It's him. He's the one. He's the only man who can beat Barack Obama or beat Donald Trump. Vote for me. Nominate me. That's why I should be the nominee, because I can beat Donald Trump. And then he says, could you have beat him in 2016? You know, I don't know, man. He continued, quote, "Everybody says that. But look, I don't know. You've got to be in the game. I thought Hillary would have made a good president." Again, not addressing the issue at hand. He should have said, yes, absolutely, I could have beaten Donald Trump without a problem. Hands down, I would have beaten Donald Trump. Done and done. And now I'm going to do it this time. That's the answer you give as a candidate. That's not the answer that Joe Biden gives. So the main justification for his candidacy and his huge chunk of his support is now, hey, man, I don't know. It's a crapshoot. Could have gone either way. Could have gone either way. Speaking of could have gone either way, California could have gone into the ocean a long time ago. That's what I was promised as a child, and it hasn't happened yet. So instead, they've decided to go into the toilet. The Sacramento Bee has a story. Remember, there are medieval diseases that should be and have been to this point relegated, thanks to our advanced medicine and soap, been relegated to the third world, that they're reemerging in Los Angeles because there's so many rats running around. So you've got this massive rat problem, and what do? Here, California, you do the dumbest thing humanly possible. The Sacramento Bee reports, quote, "The rats are winning. There are so many earlier this summer that the California EPA building in downtown Sacramento officials had to close its outdoor playground for fear of employees' kids would catch rodent-borne diseases." Yes, that's right. The California EPA's building, the playground, had to be closed. There were so many rats, they were afraid they would get the kids sick. To fight back, building officials set out a controversial type of rat poison whose use may soon be banned statewide by the California's legislature. The poison didn't stay out there very long. Once word got out that the state's top environmental regulators were using a poison widely condemned by California's powerful environmental groups. Quote, "Effective immediately, I'm putting a moratorium on the use of rodenticides around the 1001 East Street building," the secretary of the EPA in California put out there. "We will continue to monitor the situation daily and work aggressively to find effective, less toxic alternatives." So California is bringing back diseases that haven't been seen since the Middle Ages. They have a highly effective rat poison. Look, it's not fun to think of, but you've got to kill the rats. And now the hippies out there and the dippies and the lefties are saying, no, 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 you can't use that. You can't use that kind of poison. That's bad for the environment. It could hurt birds of prey or mountain lions. Well, if birds of prey or mountain lions were eating rats, there wouldn't be as many rats laying around. You're talking, unless your building is located in the woods, which it doesn't sound like this is, it sounds like it's located in downtown area, the odds of rats that you poison coming in contact with a mountain lion or a bird of prey seem pretty small. And to head off a plague, I think it's a risk worth taking, but not in California. Human Americans, I should say. You know, if there was an outbreak of something, rat-borne illness in an illegal alien detention facility, well, they'd move heaven and earth. They'd put out all kinds of poison. They would not stop until every last rat was destroyed. But that's not the world we live in. We live in a world where Americans are impacted by this, and the left doesn't care about Americans. Americans, or you save a couple of birds of prey, maybe, that happen to be combing the streets. Combing the streets of Los Angeles. I don't think that there are very many of them. I don't think there are many mountain lions walking down the streets of Sacramento. I could be wrong, and I apologize if anybody has recently been mauled by a mountain lion outside the state capitol building in Sacramento. But I think personally, that's a risk worth taking in the name of, you know, it's funny because this is about the children. So everything is done, all these liberty-infringing horrors by government are done because we need to protect the children. Well, you've got a playground covered in rat feces. Rats are, there are so many of them that they're causing diseases and they threaten the children. We could kill those rats. No, we couldn't do that. What about the mountain lions? What about the children? The children are American citizens. The mountain lions are something else entirely. Only in California, ladies and gentlemen. Only in California. Anyway, thank you for listening. That's it for today. Have yourself a wonderful Mueller day. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about all of it. Email me, Derek at DailyCaller.com. Spread the word and, see you tomorrow.
And my testosterone sometimes makes me want to feel like punching him.